Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Gallery. I'm your host, Claudia Osorio. If you're just tuning in, thank you so much for joining us. The Gallery's focus is to showcase some of Houston's bright and vibrant talent. Tonight's guest is a very dear friend of mine. Her name is Mandy Clinton. Hello, Mandy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Claudia. Thank you.
I've been wanting to have you on the show for a very long time. I think we started talking about having you on last year, probably before Halloween, I think. So it's been almost
a while,
right?
I know. Yeah,
we've been talking about it for a while. I even came and got some footage of you because, as some of you know, I take footage of the artists who make appearances on the gallery, and I make little short video clips kind of showcasing what they do.
Yeah.
I filmed you, I want to say, September of last year.
Was it that long ago?
It was that long ago, yeah. Yeah, and then they broke into my car.
Yeah, those jerks.
Those assholes.
What are they doing with that footage, is what I want to know.
It's hours of you just, like, writing and playing at your keyboard and standing at your mic.
Yeah, so. Pretending to sing. No, I'm kidding. I really was singing.
Yeah, you were really singing. Really, yeah, you were recording.
Working on a recording, yeah.
I think you were recording Semi-Precious.
Can't Hide It, maybe?
Oh, okay, maybe.
Yeah, I think Can't Hide It.
Okay, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah. So those of you who know Mandy, you are the front woman for the local band The Lorries. But you have also ventured into a solo career, which is Pearl Crush.
Yes.
So how did you get started with Pearl Crush?
I just needed like an outlet. I needed like a different kind of outlet, I guess. I have been playing music for almost 10 years. I taught myself guitar in college and then like started playing right at the end of college, like playing out shows and in College Station, Texas. And like, I have never had like any real recordings of any of my songs up until this release, the 7-inch that I just put out, on Poison Moon Records, which is kind of crazy. Like, I have like dozens and dozens and dozens of songs, but I've only just recently like started having recordings of them. And the reason I have recordings of them now is because, like, I did it myself. Like, I just took the initiative and did it myself. The Lorries has, like, we have a few demos online. But, yeah, other than that, really, there's, like, not any, like, decent recordings of anything I've ever written, which is just, it's, like, it's really sad because a lot of the songs that I've written, like, I don't really remember how to play. So I don't really have record of, like, just, like, dozens of songs that, like, I've written over the years.
But as a group, you guys never were in the studio, the Lorries.
We never, no. The demos that we put out, we self-recorded. We've never made it, yeah, it's just not happened for us ever, which is really sad because, I mean, it's like some of just the best musicians I've ever played with. So I think it will happen. I think it's going to happen later this year.
You guys are absolutely one of my favorites, and
Thank you. You
and I became friends recently. I want to say, yeah, like mid last year. But I have actually been going to your shows for a couple of years now. And I saw the Lorries at Satellite Bar. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was like the first show at Satellite Bar. Yeah, like right after like the Tijerinas, like.
I think so. Yeah, I remember being there with Daniel, and Caitlin was there too. And I was really excited when you guys took the stage because I had never... I shouldn't say I have never seen a band of people of color. But it's such a rarity to see a female led band with people of color. And Alex, who also, would you consider him your partner for the Lorries?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, Alex and I are like mostly the creative kind of forces behind the band. Kirk, however, is like totally an integral member. We're the three of us are really the core, right. But I would say that creatively, like, Alex and I are mostly driving the Lorries. So I mean, I'm like one of the only Asian women like that plays music that I'm aware of in town. I mean, certainly Friends a band, I know. I mean, Anna Garza, I play actually in another band called Claire with Anna Garza, but like we're kind of just like alone. We just like have to hold each other and like cry sometimes about some of the shit that we have to deal with. But
are you aware of how inspiring that is for women to see a band that has a significant impact in the local arts community have people of color? Are you aware of how inspiring that is for a younger generation who are just kind of being introduced to the Houston art scene? Because it's like when I was in high school, I didn't come down to Houston and hang out. It wasn't until I got into college. I went to the University of Houston. And so it's that new generation that I feel that are coming out to shows, people that I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Because during that time, I saw a lot of different people there. Has anybody ever come up to you? And
You know, people don't really come up to me much after shows with the Lorries. Some of my songs with the Lorries are like a little... I'm like a little angry, I guess, when I perform. I don't know if I'm just like not as approachable. Maybe once or twice have like another young Asian woman came up to me. Maybe like, I think just once. And it was like, wow. Like it was really great to see like an Asian woman like performing, fronting a band. Like it was really cool. It actually happened in Austin. I hope that what I am doing is inspiring to other young Asian people, women, people, just people, because it's kind of lonely gig in a lot of ways for me. I mean, it's not, but I don't know. Like I was recalling recently this show last year, Mitski was touring with Japanese Breakfast and Jay Som, and it was just like so like amazing for me to like attend that show. It was like the first time I had ever been to a show where there was like more than one Asian person like on stage. And I really don't think like I'm being hyperbolic. Like I really think that that's absolutely true. It was like the very first time. And I've been like going to shows for like years and years and years. And so it was just crazy. I like cried through like Japanese Breakfast, like whole set. Like, not, like, sobbed, but I was just, like, my eyes were welling up.
Yeah, definitely been affected by
We've all been there. Yeah. We've all been there. But yeah, I mean, like, I guess, I hope that, yeah, people kind of feel that way a little bit when they see me perform. Because I definitely try to be deliberate being myself. I think that's really important. I think that's something that like women of color in particular should see more. But I just try to kind of not be worried about, not like be too in my head about things when I'm performing. Just kind of like let myself express what I want to express. That's my dog. Sorry. We're going to have to edit that out. Yeah, but just, like, let myself express what I want to express in the moment. I don't know. It's just, like, very nice to hear those kinds of things from other women of color, especially. I mean, I remember one of the first times we talked, it came up. Oh, like, you were like, I recognize you from the Lorries now. Like, we kind of, like, realized, oh, like, we kind of have, like, seen each other before. And you just said to me, like, yeah, it was just, like... so amazing to see like another woman of color up there doing it. So that just, I mean, that means a lot to me. That always like will mean a lot to me, I think.
I think what you guys inspired in me was the fact that you came together and put out some quality art, because you guys are really, really good.
That's really sweet.
No, I mean, and I'm not saying it because you're sitting right in front of me and you're doing everyone this interview.
Everyone says that. Everyone says no.
Everybody thinks. General consensus in Houston. But yeah, no, you guys are incredibly talented.
Thank you.
Your music works and it speaks to you. I'm a huge fan. And of course, you guys being from Houston, it's pretty awesome to have you guys in town. So another thing that we have in common... that I was, I'm not going to say really happy to hear, but when you told me, I was like, yes, somebody gets it. So you grew up in the suburbs too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So where are you from? Where's your zip code?
Oh, God, I don't even know anymore. I'm from Cypress. I don't know my zip. 77429.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there we go. It's all coming back to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up in Cypress. I mean, if you're from Cypress, You're probably upper middle class, and there's a very good chance that you're white, maybe pretty conservative. It was a weird place. You always kind of find people. They're not always like your people, but like you find people. So I definitely like found people growing up. I still have like a really good friend. We met in fifth grade when I moved to Cyprus from Corpus Christi. We're still friends. My friend Katie and I still see each other. But yeah, it was like a really weird place. But like that's kind of been a lot of my life because like my parents are white and my brothers are white and like the majority of my extended family is white. So I've always, there's always just been this like thing kind of in my experience, which is that, yeah, I'm like, I'm surrounded by like Caucasian people like a lot of the time. So, I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm not one of those people that really has like thought about all the ways in which like growing up in like this kind of place like Cyprus has like affected me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. So did that help you develop your artistry? It seems like you're saying that it didn't really, because I'm thinking about, for example, Arcade Fire, which put out The Suburbs, and they're from my neck of the woods. They're from the Woodlands.
Yeah.
Wynn Butler is, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote The Suburbs, and that album really resonated with me as a suburban kid growing up in a very, very predominantly white neighborhood.
Yeah.
Being Hispanic and not being able to find that happy medium. Like, I wasn't Hispanic enough. I wasn't Latin enough. I wasn't Mexican enough. I wasn't Central American.
You're definitely not white.
But I was absolutely not white.
Yeah.
And the people that I went to school with definitely never let me forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And even though they were my friends, you know, I had friends in high school, there were always the jokes, which now as an adult looking back, it did feel a little offensive. Did you ever have experiences like that where you ever felt offended?
Yeah. I feel like my childhood and like just like formative years were just like really alienating, and you don't really realize it when, I mean, all teenagers go through shit, but you don't really like realize how like especially race plays into kind of your like alienation until I think you're older and you have some distance from it, and there's not so many painful kinds of like triggers and things like that. I don't know, that's kind of been my experience, is only kind of recently coming to realize how things were like different for me than other people too. Other people with like more kind of privilege. And obviously like I have a lot of privilege. Like I was raised by like white people who introduced me to like American culture. Like I was assimilated into white culture. It just like, I just happened to like look Korean and I am Korean. So I don't know how all this affects my art now, other than like with Pearl Crush specifically, like I write about kind of identity and like being Asian and like putting up with just like horrible stereotypes and never feeling like, just like never feeling like people that don't know you accept you as like a human, just like facing just like regular dehumanization and like being angry about that. Like that, those are things that I'm like writing about in my stuff with Pearl Crush a lot.
So Pearl Crush came out of your desire to finally put forth the songs that you had been, I guess, kind of stewing for a while. Is that safe to say?
No, like I actually wrote everything for Pearl Crush. Like, I was like, I'm going to do this solo thing. And I just started writing songs for
Okay, so it was an inside of you, like where you're like, I just need to let all of this out. And it was just a rush of art that came pouring out.
No, I mean, with me, it's never been able to be a rush. I wish I could be like really prolific. I just don't have that much time to work on music, unfortunately. Like I get a few hours here and there throughout the week. Like if I don't have a wedding to go to or like a birthday party, or, you know, I have maybe like, a handful of hours on the weekend to work on stuff. So I would love for it to be like an outpouring. But I haven't really gotten in that rhythm because of just like working and like working full time and all the other kind of things that I'm doing and that I choose to do. I'm not complaining about it, but I'm complaining about having to work so much, but no, but everything else I do because I want to and I like really enjoy doing it.
How would you describe your sound for Pearl Crush?
Very poppy. I mean, it's kind of like, I keep kind of telling people it's kind of like at this intersection of like dream pop and synth pop and like Baroque pop. I like, am really into like MIDI, like marimba sounds, like MIDI marimba instruments right now. I don't know why. I actually like used to play marimba in high school. So my main instrument was oboe in high school. And you can't march with an oboe. And marching band is like this huge fucking thing in Texas. It's just like, it's insane. It's this whole thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like culture. It's kind of like homecoming and
it's
mums,
like homecoming like on people, fucking steroids. Like
people from like
people are so intense about it.
Different states don't even understand what mums are. Like the mums. Oh like yeah, the actual mums that with right. The ribbons and like the whole like the
whistles and the
yeah. Cowbells.
The sparkles and the teddy bears.
That's Texas for you.
Oh, my God.
That's Texas, y'all.
Oh, God. This is making me think of Friday Night Lights.
Yep.
That show.
That was our lives, though, living in the suburbs. Are you kidding me? That's what, like, that's what, that was the entertainment for us on Friday nights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing else to do.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, I was, like, we would have to play, like, oboists can't march because the reeds are, like, too delicate. And like, there's just a whole, like it would just be a mess if oboists marched and played. So like they made us play like these like kinds of like orchestral, like keyboard instruments, these percussion instruments. And so it was like this whole thing, you know, it was like, we basically like became like double reed, musicians became like proficient at like two instruments by the time they like graduated high school, which was really cool. And I would love to like be able to record like a live instrument like that now, but I mean, like, I don't know where I would get access to like instruments like that now. So I just use like MIDI stuff, but yeah, it's just kind of like poppy. I don't know. Like I'm influenced by Blood Orange and Maria Uzbek and Grimes and Carolyn Polachek. I don't know. Also, Solange's last record was just like so amazing and so influential.
So how did you conceptualize Pearl Crush? Because you have this imagery mm-hmm. with this project.
Yeah.
To me, it seems very dreamlike and candy-like.
And oh.
I absolutely love it. But yeah. I don't know what you meant for it to be. Even the album.
The album?
The album cover. You're up against some shrubs.
Yeah,
you have some really, jasmine. Really cool braid. But your promo pics, too, that were taken.
Yeah.
Who took those promo pics?
Daniela Galindo. Mm-hmm. Galindo. She's amazing. She's, like, an amazing photographer. I think she went to St. Edward's in Austin for photography. But, yeah, she took my promo pics. And I knew I wanted, like, light pink to be kind of, like, the Pearl Crush color. And she took these pictures, like, in my house or in my apartment, the same apartment that we're in right now. And I have these, like, kind of, like, light yellow walls. And a lot of the pictures, like, were against these walls, and I was kind of in pink clothing. And that kind of became, like, those kind of became the Pearl Crush colors, and it just kind of made sense. Like femininity is not something that I have always been super comfortable with, my own femininity. I think there's, like, a lot to that. I don't really feel like unpacking it right now, but I wanted like Pearl Crush to be like really feminine. For me, like the imagery that I like and that I think of when I think of Pearl Crush, I'll have like a fixation for like maybe a month or something, and I'll want to kind of explore that, like circles, moons. I was really into like moons. For some reason, I was working on this song, and it had, like, this lyric about a moon in it, or, like, a crescent moon.
So was there any symbolic imagery to that?
Well, yeah, I was comparing. So it's like this new song that I've performed it a couple times, but it's called Milk and Moon. Mm-hmm. And I like, there's this line about my crescent moon eyes are washed down with the milk of America. Mm-hmm. And milk of America is supposed to like represent the sort of whitewashing of people of color, specifically in my instance, Asian people. There's been a lot of this stuff happening in entertainment where it wasn't really about that, but just kind of coincidentally, like all of this was culminating around the same time, like the Ghost in the Shell Scarlett Johansson casting was like in the Asian American community, like it was like people were outraged. So things like this happening, just feeling, I mean, I could explain that metaphor a little bit more, but I got really fixated on moons. Like, I'm really into, like, liquid right now for some reason. I guess maybe, like, tying in with the milk. The New Inquiry, their last issue had, like, a lot of essays and things about, like, liquid. And it just really kind of, like, resonated with me as kind of, like, this... They had a piece kind of about, like, immigration and, like, immigrants crossing the ocean, a lot of immigrants crossing the ocean to come to the United States, and, like, just kind of the spaces in which they inhabit during that journey, and then kind of how, like, they become different to people that, like, already live in the United States. They just become kind of, like, different as soon as they step foot on land. Xenophobic Americans, like immigrants, immediately become unsavory people. Like, you know, while they're making their journey, they're people, they're human, and then like once they set foot on land, oh, like they're here to like steal our jobs or whatever. So I don't know. There were these kinds of like metaphors that I had been thinking about a lot, and I guess I incorporate a lot of that into the imagery that I use, and then some of that like ties back into the songs.
Now, amongst your many admirable qualities, you've also taken a very public stance with recent issues in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited because I really want to talk to you about Damn Girl, or I'm really excited to bring it up. There was something that happened a couple of months ago, and you organized this workshop.
Mm-hmm.
It was a book your own shows workshop for women out in the community to come and sort of get some information on how to move forward with starting to book their own shows.
Yeah, it was actually for non-cis males, actually. So anyone that was not a cis male was invited. We only had like women attend.
That's right.
From what I can recall.
So out of that one little seed, that first meeting that mm-hmm. that a lot of us attended.
Yeah.
We kept meeting after that, and I feel like we've kind of started to form our own group, because it started with ideas and exchanging ideas with each other. How can we come up with ways to make music venues safer mm-hmm. for anybody who feels threatened?
Yeah, marginalized mm-hmm. peeps.
Absolutely marginalized.
Yeah.
So Damn Girl came out of that very first meeting. And I think we didn't decide to become Damn Girl until probably the fourth or fifth meeting.
Yeah, the name.
Damn Girl came about because of the grant that you applied to.
Yes, the Idea Fund grant. Yeah, so Damn Girl actually, so one of our members, Jessica Fuque, she had an art show a couple of years ago in her house. I think that artists invited to display were women, I would assume based on the name. Women identifying artists. And once she kind of told us about her show that she had put on, like a lot of us in the collective were like that's just like a great name, like Damn Girl, you know, like that's like a really awesome painting. Or
yeah, you know, I think we came like together after the application for the Idea Fund grant.
Yes.
I think you told us that you had used it as a that you guys decided to use it as a filler. But then we're all like, well, why don't we just stick with that?
Yeah.
I think we all really liked it immediately. almost instantly.
Yeah, it's super, like, exclamatory, which I think is cool. Just kind of powerful.
So for those out there who are not very familiar with Damn Girl and our mission, could you speak a little bit to what we're trying to do?
Yeah. I mean, some of it you touched on, like, we're definitely trying to make Houston a safer, more inclusive place in spaces where people are either performing or displaying art, but bars as well. We have like an anti-harassment policy that a number of people in our group have worked on, and we intend to go out to various venues and bars and spaces and talk to the staff about adopting the policy to have kind of an accountability measure in place. If people are being harassed, it's being reported, and then the staff isn't doing anything about it. So that's one of the things that we are working on. We also are just generally just trying to like amplify the voices of women, of gender diverse folks who people that perhaps like don't fit the mold of like what it is to like be like an artist that, you know, like has a huge following, or maybe they're not getting media attention because they don't kind of fit into this like
mold of a very typical indie band in the city.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. There are like so many people in this city, and I'm sure we have, you know, musicians in the city, and I'm sure like we just don't know about so many of them because they're just not given a platform. They're not given like an opportunity, maybe because they don't like feel confident putting themselves out there. They don't feel like the scene is like a particularly welcoming place. I mean, I, you know, after like this stuff came out about Satellite Bar and the Booker there, like, I mean, I heard and well, I read and heard so many times that like so many like women in particular, like just don't come out to shows anymore because they don't want to put up with like getting harassed when some guy's drunk and like trying to like mess with them, you know, like, and that's just not the type of scene that like Damn Girl is like gonna put up with anymore. So we're kind of creating an alternate to cis male driven scene. I always get nervous like talking about Damn Girl like in a really like kind of formal way, because I mean I don't really have any experience booking or with
well, it's in many ways still a baby.
It's definitely a baby.
And we're trying to raise it. We're trying to raise it right.
That's a funny metaphor.
I'm really excited to be working with you. And I want to say it's about 15 other women that are currently a part of the collective.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to have really, really great ideas. And I'm really excited to see where it goes, because I feel like it started going one way, but then it started going a completely different direction, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
It started to grow, and the women who are in it now keep adding to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because, like, we've got artists and musicians and comedians and, like, activists. And so, yeah, it's been, like, really amazing for me, just speaking personally, getting to know, like, a lot of these women politically aware and have done, like, activist kind of work in the past. I mean, I had been working or volunteering with Girls Rock Camp previous to the formation of Damn Girl, but I've gotten to meet like so many other amazing creative women since it formed. It's just like I feel like in a way like I've like for the first time kind of feel home in Houston, like since I maybe one of the only times in my life where I've really felt like a part of something and been like really jazzed about it. I mean, I've certainly been a part of things before. I went to A&M, so things are like all about kind of unity and like the Aggie spirit and all this. But I never really felt a part of
spirit.
Yeah, never felt a part of that. I mean, I was like in band and things like this in high school and before that. It's like different when you're all working towards like one thing.
Let's backtrack a little bit. You mentioned Girls Rock Camp. How did you come to be involved with that? I actually went to the last performance of Girls Rock Camp last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so neat.
It's amazing.
It was really, really cool. I went because you were involved. Caitlin was involved.
Yeah.
So a lot of my friends are involved with Girls Rock Camp. So it was really cool originally to go out there. I actually didn't know what it was. I'm really ashamed to say. I went out there. I went out there to support you guys because I kept seeing online that a lot of people were participating in this. And then when I walked in, there was a group on stage. I wish I could remember their name. It was so cute.
Was it like the kid, little cat?
Yes.
Girls, little tiny. Yeah. They were like the youngest band. I think they were called like the Jaguars or something. Or maybe it was some kind of pun of Jaguar. I don't know. Or some weird spelling of it. And they were wearing cat ears and their song was like about a cat that like was playing with a string or something. Like,
which really resonated with me.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows I'm such a huge cat person.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So I heard that song and I was like, it's like they wrote it for me.
Yeah.
But how did you come to be involved with Girls Rock Camp?
I mean, I've only volunteered for Girls Rock Camp a couple of years. I don't know, like when I started playing music, like I just, someone like mentioned it and I was like, that sounds amazing. And so I just like went to the information session and, volunteered. I was only able to do kind of like a few half days. It's like a week long camp and we teach week. I don't know if teach is the right word, but, we kind of mentor girls ages. I think it's like 8 to 18. Though we had like a 5-year-old, that was actually my coworker's daughter, at the last camp, but, it's 8 to 18 and, they pick an instrument. We put them in kind of a band, with girls their same age. And there are like various workshops, like zine making, social justice workshops, and they kind of just like float around to different projects throughout the day, band rehearsal, instrument instruction, and at the end of the week, so the camp is a week long. At the end of the week, they're to have written and rehearsed like a song to perform at the showcase, which is what you attended. So yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly like how I got involved. I just like heard about it and was like, yeah. And then the next year I like wasn't able to do it. And then this past year I was a band coach as well as like a beginner guitar instructor, which was really cool and really fun. And again, just like getting to work with like so many amazing, it's like a volunteer based kind of thing.
Do the mentors have to be musicians?
They don't have to be musicians. Yeah, no, they don't have to be musicians. I mean, actually, a lot of them aren't, but just like passionate about kind of the mission and passionate about music, because that is a big part of what we're doing.
What was it like to kind of help shape these little minds, these like future artists of our community?
I don't know if I'm shaping any minds, but I mean, it's just like such a positive thing. It's like, I think when I was explaining, kind of describing it to Caitlin, like I think I was like, volunteering for Girls Rock Camp is like the most important thing I'll ever do. And I still like kind of feel that way, which I think is cool. We're there. Everyone is there. Everyone is volunteering their time just to like make the experience as like amazing as possible for these campers. And we all just like come together and work our butts off, like improvise. It's all about just like being flexible. And it's like one of the greatest things I've ever gotten to be a part of.
So stylistically, how different is Pearl Crush from what you've done in the past musically?
It's not super crazy different. I mean, I've only ever really written like pop songs, but I suppose the influences are a bit different. They're just more kind of straightforward pop influences. I mean, I guess one big difference is like I'm doing pretty much everything. So I'm like performing almost everything. I don't play drums. So when I need live drums, I have my boyfriend Kirk play drums on the tracks. But everything else I'm pretty much doing myself, and I'm exploring electronic instruments a little bit more and electronic music. So I'm programming like drum beats and using synthesizers and that kind of fun stuff, which like I had never explored before. Like that's something that's like very exclusive to Pearl Crush, at least thus far. I don't know, like the songs are they're more just kind of like about my experiences I don't really like fictionalize the lyrics.
What sort of things do you write about?
I mean, I write about.
I mean, earlier you said that some of them have to do with
identity and things like that. Yeah. I mean, like a song always starts probably with like an emotion for me. Like, you know, I'm angry about something or I'm like confused about something, and then I kind of like work it out in the song a bit. A lot of the stuff is about just kind of what's on my mind at that kind of given moment when I kind of have a burst of inspiration. Like the songs on the 7-inch aren't really political in any way, but they're more about kind of like what you cherish, like the things that you cherish, and like the conception behind the 7-inch, like the cover is like this kind of like dystopian world, and like there's like this jasmine that is kind of a remnant of the past and associated with like all these kinds of memories. So yeah, not all the stuff is like per se political, but a lot of it is. So
you've been very vocal about certain issues in the nation. Earlier we talked about how you were vocal about things going on locally, but in the nation as a whole, you've been to marches. You've been pretty vocal online. Has any of that shaped any of your songwriting?
Not like super directly, but there is this kind of unveiling of all this like shit that I guess I knew was always there. I'm not sure that like what's kind of happening politically at the national level is like having a direct influence on my music, but like being very aware of power dynamics has always kind of driven some of my like lyrical content. So that's certainly the case, because there's like these things that operate on the like large national scale, and then like they kind of like just there's like layers of the same things, like interpersonal kinds of power dynamics and things like that that go on just between like two people. And so I write about that stuff like a whole lot.
What is the best piece of advice that you've received as a musician?
Just do it yourself. Kind of like what I was saying earlier, I was like very passive about recording, and it just like didn't work out before for a lot of reasons. But and then in other ways, I wasn't really pursuing recording, but I think it's really like made a big difference in how I view myself as a musician, and view it more concretely and more seriously. And I'm getting to explore like just recording everything on my own. Like I've been getting to learn so much and explore these things that kind of were just like black boxes before. Like studio engineering, like audio engineering, is like a whole skill, like a whole thing, and
other level of skill set.
Yeah, it's like insane. There's so much information. Yeah. The equipment is just so expensive. It's like really kind of a boys' club. I think I saw a statistic like 5% of audio engineers are women, which is it's like what? It's crazy. 5%. But like I believe that. I mean, like just anecdotally, like I believe that. So like when you start kind of like learning stuff yourself, just even like home studio stuff, like even just like doing shit on a laptop, like you just, it starts demystifying kind of the black box that is like audio engineering. And it's like I'm never gonna like understand it to a level in which like I could call myself any kind of like expert, but you just start kind of chipping away, and it's just like really empowering.
Your album, First Blush, is written, recorded, and produced by you. What was that process like, recording First Blush?
It was really fun. I mean, literally, that's like those two songs are the first songs that I ever recorded. I got like a little interface, and it came with Ableton Light, and it like Ableton Light like limits you to like 4 tracks. So then like I wanted to do more, so I bought like the expansion pack thing. And I mean, really, those were like the baby.
It's an investment.
Oh, it's definitely an investment.
A creative investment.
Yeah. But yeah, those are like my precious baby songs. Like those were the first songs that like I'll ever record. And that's one of the reasons why like I decided to put it out on vinyl, is because it was like this is like the first physical copy of my music. So I really like wanted to just like make it really special. And I mean, the project is moving, it started moving very quickly in a direction that is a little bit different than those two songs. I mean, not so much different. Like everything I do is just really like, it's very just melody driven. And you can throw a melody over basically any kind of instrumentation. But yeah, in terms of like production and instrumentation, like things are moving in a different direction now. But yeah, I was really pleased with the way those songs turned out, and just like getting to have like something physical, you know, like a physical release was like really important to me. So
a couple of weeks ago, you had your record release party mm-hmm. at Wired Up.
Yes.
What was that night like? It was so cool.
Oh, it was so fun.
So many people came out and it was such a good vibe.
Yeah.
What was that night like for you?
It was a bit of a whirlwind. I mean, that whole kind of like week was a whirlwind, and I was just like getting stuff ready and rehearsing. And then I kind of over-rehearsed like my
voice. How do you over-rehearse?
I pushed my voice too hard.
Oh, I see.
Like the day before, or maybe like 2 days before, and then I was like a little bit like raw, like the night of the show. But it was really fun. I don't know. I just wanted it to kind of be a party. Like we decorated it. We decorated it with like lots of like those like tinsel curtain things, and like just wanted it to be really like dreamy kind of party space, I guess. But yeah, it was great.
Your family came out too.
Yeah, my mom and then my dad's fiance came out. My dad had surgery recently, so he unfortunately wasn't able to attend, but yeah, it was great having them there. And then like I had my friend Renee come in from Austin, which was amazing. And just like so many just supportive people were there, which was really great. And I was like, there wasn't a stage because it's just like a little shop that we were set up in. So everybody was just like right in front of the performer. Like the audience was just like right in front of the performer. So I always think that's kind of fun. It can be a bit awkward just like up on stage being so far away from people. There's a fun element to that, like a performance element to that, but I also like really like being down on the floor, like able to kind of just like play with people and like dance around. And so it was awesome. And Ryan Grimes was amazing. He was the other like live performer.
Opener, yeah.
His stuff, he goes by Baby Horse. I hope he starts playing, but yeah, he was amazing also. And then I had two DJs, friends of mine, DJ Yessi and DJ Yaz Espaza. And they were also awesome.
So Beauty and the Beast, a live action movie, just came out this last weekend. I have always personally been inspired by this movie in particular, mm-hmm. by Beauty and the Beast. Was there anything that inspired you as a kid?
I loved Beauty and the Beast. That was like my go-to Disney movie.
That was my favorite.
It was my favorite also.
That was our favorite.
It's so magical and like romantic. I mean, some of it, I haven't seen it in like so long. And if I saw it now, I might have problems with it. Maybe not though. I don't know. But
we were trying to recall what the plot of Beauty and the Beast was.
I mean, her dad's like an inventor. He's like so old though.
Yeah, he's like super
old. It doesn't make
old.
Sense how old he is. Is yeah. it her? It's her dad though, right?
Yeah, it's her dad.
And he like goes.
He goes away. I don't remember why
he tries to go to like a competition.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So
he enters
a local competition, and so he's gonna be away for overnight, right? Is that correct?
I don't know why she leaves. Why does she leave and stumble upon the castle?
No. So he leaves and Philippe, his horse, comes back like solo, and Belle bursts out. This is where it gets good.
Okay.
So Belle bursts out and she was like, where is my dad? Where's my dad, Philippe? And Philippe is like super,
he's
upset.
Like, yeah.
Like he's spooked. He's spooked.
Yeah. I was going to say shaken, but that's a better
word. Yeah, no, he's spooked.
He's shaken to the core.
Okay. And so she's just like, she puts on her little cloak and she's like, Philippe, take me to my father. I don't think that's what she says, but that's basically what she means. So she gets on Philippe, they ride for like a little while, and then they get to the castle.
Oh, and then like wolves don't wolves like start chasing them or something? And that's how she like,
this is when she escapes from the castle, because she's just like, she's been at the castle for a while.
That's
and the
when
beast,
she escaped. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the beast so is like, fine, just leave. Oh, it's because she goes to the West Wing after the beast told her to stay out of the West Wing.
Oh, and she finds like the torn.
She finds the rose
portrait.
Oh, well, she finds the rose, and she picks up the little glass case, and she's about to touch it, and then the beast bursts in, and he's pissed because he's like, you know, like if that rose loses all of its petals, then the curse
stuck
is permanent.
Like this.
Yeah, he's stuck like a beast. So he's just like, get out.
Right.
So that's when Belle makes her escape, and then she gets hunted down by some wolves. I guess Philippe has been just hanging outside the castle for like a day, because she gets on him and they gallop away.
Oh.
And then the wolves start attacking them, and then that's when the beast comes after.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then he gets injured and she takes care of
him. Yeah, and then she's like, you know.
Yeah.
He was like, this wouldn't have happened if you hadn't run away. And she was like, well, you have to learn how to control
him a little bit.
Your temper. And then that's when, like, all of the enchanted objects are like, damn. She could be the one. I like how they keep saying, like, oh, she could be the one. Because she talks back to him.
Right. She doesn't, like, let him treat her like total shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But that's the thing. Like, that's why I was like, I don't know if I would, like it that much now. But it was my fave, for sure.
I think it's interesting. She was definitely, they say, so I watched the live action recently. And they talk about how she, you know, in this version, she is the inventor. Her dad is not.
Oh.
Yeah, she's the inventor. And she invents something pretty cool. Pretty ingenious. I won't spoil it.
Don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it. But I thought she, came up with something pretty neat. So from a very young age, I found Belle very inspiring. So that's why I was asking you if you found anything. Was it cartoons? Did you listen to any music? What did you grow up listening to or watching?
I mean, I listened to like a lot of Disney jams. Yeah. I think like a lot of
Disney radio.
Kids did that. I don't know what Disney radio is. What is that? Is that like a...
Well.
Okay.
Allow me to educate you.
Okay.
It is an entire radio station devoted to Disney jams.
I guess. No, I didn't listen to that. I don't know. I mean, I listened to, like, a lot of pop music. I mean, I remember, like, when I was, like, in fifth grade, I wasn't really... I was a kid, I guess, still. But I was, like, so into Leanne Rimes. That's, like, one of my favorite
Leanne
singers.
Rimes. I mean, she's an incredible vocalist.
Yeah. I mean, I would just, like, dance around on my bed and, like, belt out those songs. Like that How Do I Live song. That was like my jam. I wasn't into anything like particularly cool. I mean, I'm still not really into like particularly like cool pop music stuff. I just remember singing a lot of like Disney songs. So like the Little Mermaid stuff, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin. Yeah, I mean, I would say like the first exposure I had to music that I just really, really, really loved was like Disney music. I mean, my mom made us take piano lessons when we were little, and then like I played in band. I played flute and then I switched to oboe. So I was always like super, super musical, and I just like loved music. Like I just really loved playing like slow kind of like really expressive music when I like played oboe. And I mean, even still, like really just like a kind of expressive emotional ballads are like my favorite kinds of songs, my favorite pop songs of pop artists. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the songs that I've been writing recently that people like really, really like are like the slower kind of ballad songs as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's something to that for sure.
So what's in Pearl Crush's future? Where do you see yourself in a year?
Oh boy. I mean, in a year, hopefully I will have put out an EP and we'll be working on my next release. I'm working on an EP now, and I hope to do a little bit of, not crazy touring, but like a little bit of touring later this year as well. So that's something that I've never really, really done before. I did that a little bit right after college, but only kind of hit up regional spots. So that's something that would be pretty cool. yeah, I don't, other than that, I'm not really sure where things are going.
What's the journey look like then? What will you be doing in the meantime? So you said that you're going to start looking into touring.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be doing more local shows, I imagine.
I'm not wanting to like play a ton with Pearl Crush. I really just don't have time to do that. And I'm playing in a couple of other bands and Damn Girl. And then again, like I said, I work full time. So it's a lot to like play a ton of shows, or for me it is. I don't know. I get kind of worked up right before a show. Not even right before a show, like 2 weeks out from a show, I start kind of just having this like low grade kind of anxiety. So I'm wanting to kind of focus on other things with Pearl Crush, I guess. But yeah, like working on an EP, still kind of just trying to find the sound. And that's something that will always probably kind of change and develop for me.
Creatively.
Exploring. Yeah, just exploring like different technology, exploring different ways of writing songs.
So Pearl Crush could eventually evolve into
something. Oh, I'm sure it will evolve into something.
Something different. Would you ever consider expanding, or are you just wanting to keep Pearl Crush a solo project?
In terms of writing, I think I want to keep it solo, but it would be cool to like have other people perform with me, depending on kind of what I do with the tracks and if I can take it to a live setting with live instruments. But yeah, I think in terms of like writing, I'd like to, for as long as possible, I don't know, it's not like, oh, like you just give up or whatever, but keeping it just like me. It's just something that I feel like I'm kind of like doing for myself. And I'm collaborating like in all these other spaces. So this feels kind of just like my thing, my baby. And then I'm getting to be collaborative like in these other areas.
How important is it for there to be more female driven or people of color out there performing or being a part of bands or musicians or just artists in general? How important do you feel it is for them to have more of a presence in our community?
I mean, I think it's really, 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 really important. When you see someone else doing it that looks like you or that you can identify with, it's just, if you're like creative and trying to do it too, it just like is so, so empowering. It's like we're such a diverse city. You touched upon both race and gender. Yeah, like I know, I've just noticed there's still like a lot of like bills with like exclusively male fronted projects or bands. We don't want to tokenize people, but it just seems almost like there's something fishy going on when like you just see like a bill with like only dudes on the bill. I don't know. So, I mean, that's a big part of what Damn Girl is about. A lot of this stuff is just like, it's just like so ingrained in the culture. And so I think it, a lot of the times to make it change does take like a force of just like radical, like women of color to like make it better.
I like to end my show by asking all of my guests the same question. What is currently inspiring you right this very moment? It could be anything, anything at all, a book, an album. It could even be a person. What is inspiring you right this very moment?
Damn Girl is like just really keeping me going these days. A lot of the women who are a part of that are just, I mean, they're all amazing and just like so smart and so kind and like just like wanting to do something to make the scene like a better place. Like I had said before, it kind of like feels finally like maybe there's a place for me. Like in the world or in Houston or something. Like I just turned 30 in last August, and you know, it's kind of like, I guess I'm just always going to be a late bloomer, but it feels like in a lot of ways, like this is the first time in my life I've really ever felt like a part of something bigger than myself in a way. I mean, I know people say that about things and it's kind of like cliche, but that's really how I feel about Damn Girl. I'm just like so, so excited about getting to like spend time with these people, these women, and like working towards like a common kind of goal. And also like getting to like still incorporate, you know, art and music and comedy and like all this stuff that is so, so wonderful and makes life like so like much more rich.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Mandy.
Thank you for having me.
It's been such a pleasure, and it's been a very long time in the making. We've been planning it for a very long time. How can people find you? Do you have a page?
I do. I have a Facebook page. I have an Instagram account. I have a SoundCloud and a Bandcamp.
All Pearl Crush.
Yeah. You can find me any of those places.
I really appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation with me about your artistry.
It was a pleasure.
You're an incredibly inspiring woman, and I'm really, really proud to call you my friend. So, like I said, it's been an honor to have you on the gallery, and I'm really excited to see what you do with Pearl Crush. Your sound is so great. It's so beautiful. It's so you.
Thank you.
And like I said, I'm so proud of you. So thank you.
Well, that's all just very, very, very sweet. And the feeling is mutual. I mean, I'm just so glad that we met, and I don't remember who introduced us. I guess Birthday Club.
Yeah.
But they're amazing. And, I'm so, so glad. So glad.
Shout out to Birthday Club. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in to this episode of The Gallery. If you want to reach out, you can email me at thegallerypodcast@gmail.com. You can also like me on Facebook, The Gallery Podcast, or follow me on Instagram at The Gallery Podcast. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Thank you. What else? What else you got?
Without you, I want to know how do I breathe without you.